What role will Australia play at a global level in the future? Will we all be driving with our little bottles of milk next to us on the car seat with the strap around it? What role do we actually play at a global level now? The Prime Minister would like us to be seen as a middle-level power, but what does that mean? As a young country, where do we lead and where do we fall behind? Great to hear from you about this afternoon. 19774774 is the text message number, but with me in the chamber, Sharon Burrows is the Secretary of the ACTU. Sharon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
John Langmore, who's the former UN ambassador, politician and currently professorial fellow in political science, sociology and criminology at University of Melbourne. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Lindy.
And congratulations on having the longest title out of the entire panel.
I apologise for that.
No, it's tremendous. Stephen Mayne, shareholder activist. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, Lindy.
Tony Moclair, comic writer and comedian. Hi, Tony.
Hello, Lindy. I feel like I need to bow to you because you're in the Speaker's chair.
I am sitting in the Speaker's chair. Bowing would be completely acceptable. And Alex Zahov-Reut, who is with technology website itwire.com. Alex, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So as a young country, as I was mentioning, John, where do we lead and where do we fall behind in terms of a global entity, if you like? Do you think, Stephen, that it's actually going to change in some way because, you and I have already discussed this on a regular basis, that the world has become a smaller place? What the fallout from the subprime crash in the United States has affected us, when in the past perhaps that may not have been the case because markets were sort of much more enclosed within each country. So that's going to become more and more the case now.
That's right. Well, this is the world's first global liquidity crisis. And basically the US have exported a terrible financial virus to the world with what's probably going to finish up being $1 trillion of losses on US home loans. So yeah, we are now more integrated than ever before. And the big question is whether, you know, the world is catching cold because of the US, but can China sort of decouple, is the word they use, from the US, and can it save Australia? Now, we're one of the few countries in the world still growing at 3% plus. Our exports to China, coal up, you know, 200%, iron ore about to rise 70%. We are being saved in many respects by China. But the US has caused the world a very serious cold, and we are seeing it still unfold at the moment. And we're being hit very hard. I mean, we've got $1 trillion of household debt. We're having more collapses, Opus Primes and Allcos and MFSs, than other comparable countries because we're too indebted.
But does that mean that, therefore, in the future, that the relationship that we have with various countries, whether that be the US, China, Burma, whoever it might be, will be not necessarily based around a political arrangement, but perhaps a business one?
I think that we will move more to business relationships. Our relationship with China, particularly under John Howard, was driven by business, that they were taking a pile of our minerals, and we sort of turned a blind eye to the traditional human rights and issues like that, which we would normally not have much in common with China. So I think in a globalised world, with the trade rising and the global financial system, things will be driven, relationships will be driven more by commercial and trading relationships, and hopefully we'll see global institutions rise more effectively to deal with that, whether it's the UN, as John Langmore mentions, or the WTO to deal with the trade issues. And I think it would be better to see less bilateral arrangements, like specific agreements with individual countries, and more global arrangements to deal with a globalised financial and commercial world.
We'll see what the others on the panel have to say about that prospect in just a moment. You're with Lindy Burns. I'm here at Parliament House, and it's a magnificent setting. It's where the green seats are. We're in the lower chamber, the lower house chamber, talking about Australia and its role in the global environment by 2020. With me, Sharon Burrows from the ACTU, John Langmore from the University of Melbourne, Tony Moclair, comic writer and comedian, Alex Zahov-Reut from itwire.com, and Stephen Mayne, shareholder activist. We'll get some comments from you as well, and send a text message on 19774774. Alex, technology may completely override all of our best intent when it comes to the way we want to see ourselves, because in the end it may just be a grassroots movement. If we think about Generation Y, we think about the YouTube, we think about Facebook, we think about the way in which communication is done, could that potentially almost take over the best intentions that governments may have? Stephen.
Alex, I couldn't agree more with you about the need to develop the technology in Australia, but one of our great failings as a nation, if you look at our top 100 companies, there isn't a single IT company in there. So many of our successful companies have, you know, government licences or they're domestically focused. And I reckon the IT sector is the worst example. I mean, we're hopeless in some regards. We're the biggest island in the world without a shipping company. We're a nation of tourists without a global hotel brand. There's a whole range of things you can say, but IT is the worst.
That's probably...
Why don't we produce great IT companies when we're great IT consumers and we take it up so readily?
That's because of the brain drain. All of the smart people have gone off to Silicon Valley and overseas to work for companies in the US or elsewhere where there's been more more funding, more money, more appreciation, more venture capital funds. And if a lot of that funding is going to be drying up, then hopefully some of these brains will come back and develop here in Australia. And we need, I guess, both, you know, government support and industry support to really rev up our IT industry.
I just want to ask Stephen something. In the US, the government over there broke up the Bell Company to ensure fair competition for consumers of telecommunications. Could we see something like the government doing that here? Because Telstra is effectively a 300-pound gorilla that controls internet broadband. Could we see the government muscling up to the company and effectively forcing it into several separately owned divisions and enforcing competition?
I think that would be a wonderful outcome. One of the great travesties of the structure of corporate Australia is the concentration of power. Countries like the UK and the US have forced divestiture laws where they break up the Standard Oils and they rein in the Microsofts and these guys who go too far. And we have, you know, very few countries have a Qantas, which has a majority share. Very few countries have a Telstra. Our bank oligopoly just strangles business. We've got a duopoly on the ports. Our construction sector is so controlled by Leighton's, which is a German-controlled company. So I think Telstra, totally agree, and right across the broader sector, if we could break up the corporate power that is so concentrated in Australia, it would allow more innovation and more flowers to bloom, because successful corporates in Australia tend to be, they dominate their home market, they've got some sort of government mandate, some sort of government licence, and they just make fat profits here, and they don't grow and take over the world, which is the culture we should be encouraging.
I was interested to know what the panel might think about Australia. It relates in a way to Tony's humorous comments at the end, but that Australia would need to be perhaps very careful in the what some describe as the aid and development industry or the NGO structure and AusAid, that it's not imposing models of everything to be done on the Pacific countries in particular, because there's the need to truly listen when we're the bigger equivalent to the US sheriff in other ways. And they have that opinion of us to some extent. And when we come to the issue of climate refugees coming here, the whole problem that, for them and what we are going to do. But just, I think we need to be very concerned about that we're truly listening to our Pacific region neighbours and what they feel and their opinions and not have things imposed on them. There's been some marvellous works done by academics at ANU and Deakin about this, and I wondered if Sharon?
Well, I think you've got two extraordinarily wise women here. They're talking about being good neighbours. And one of the ideas I'll be taking to the regional Australia and the world and Australia in our regional discussion on the weekend is a good neighbours program. We would do more good to invest in actually a dialogue between neighbours, civil society, not just government, civil society, and the diaspora that we are rich in here with our neighbouring countries, to understand their aspirations and then to build a new development model in partnership. I can tell you, if we cut a little bit off defence and put that little bit into dialogue, we would feel a lot more secure and a lot more generous as a nation, willing to help our neighbours. So good on you too. And I just want to go back to Stephen and say, it astonishes me that all this, you know, this bullshit talk from business about leave it to the market, free market, and yet you talked about competition policy earlier. Why is it that the ACCC, that our competition policy is focused purely on the supply side? Where do we get consumer competition? And the banks, my current target, are absolutely in front there. They simply hide, do everything to disguise the cost of banking. They're not responsible for their consumers. They're ready to default on mortgages rather than looking at creative solutions about shared equity and responsibility, you know, mortgage holidays, whatever it takes. So the corporate greed notion and leave it to the market seems to me a little bit like giving this world the access to the cookie jar rather than really being genuine about competition and how markets intersect with a decent development model and a fair set of rules for a trading globe.
Stephen, just 1 minute.
Well, leave it to the market is interesting. The earlier comment as well about don't sell off Australia. People don't realise how much Australia has been sold off, that we have the world's most imbalanced performance on foreign ownership. There are 250 foreign companies turning over more than $200 million a year in Australia. That Australian government owns less business assets than the Chinese government and the Singapore government own in Australia. So I think we have, like very few other countries, left it to the market very much. And on the banking sector, I agree. No one stands up for consumers. We're all getting ripped off, and I think that's regulatory failure. So, Sharon, you know, I'm with you. But I also think unions have got some...
Historic partnership.
Incredibly historic partnership. I expected you two to come to blows at some point. Well, can I please ask you to thank Sharon Burrows, John Langmore, Tony Moclair, Alex Zaharov-Royt and Stephen Mayne for this discussion this afternoon. Johnny Katz.